From the BBC in London, this is Brian Matthew introducing The Beatles Story. It's the start of a new year, 1969. During the previous year, the Beatles have spent some time in India studying transcendental meditation under the guidance of the Maharishi. They've set up Apple Corps, their own organization, controlling many widespread activities including clothing, films and records. The Beatles are beginning to develop separate interests. Part 10, Hello, Goodbye, or Come Together.
Come together.
With their different musical interests in mind, John was asked how much longer the Beatles could carry on recording together.
If we are comfortable and enjoy being the Beatles, we'll do it. And when we don't, we won't. That's always been the case. For the last 4 years, every time we've made a record, it's been a decision of whether to carry it on from there. Now, the point is, in the old days, Paul and I would knock off an LP and write most of the songs and do it. Now, nowadays, there's three of us writing equally good songs and wanting that much space. And the problem now is, do you make a double album every time, which takes 6 months of your life, or do you make one album? We spend 3 or 4 months making one album, maybe get two tracks each. That's the problem, you know. It's just a physical problem, you know. And whether we do it or not, I've no idea, you know.
And Paul said,
I don't see how we can retire. You know, it's like Bridget Bardot and Greta Garbo, and all they try to retire. You can't, because you're always there.
Crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with. In the skies with all the packing, they don't care what goes on around. In their eyes there's something lacking, what they need's a damn good whacking.
Piggies, one of George's compositions off the double album released at the end of 1968. Alastair Taylor.
In January 1969, Paul again got into the filming bit. Well, they all did. And one of the ideas they had was to really film the Beatles at work, warts and all. And a lot of this, of course, we did at Savile Row. And they got this great idea of filming them actually playing live on the roof at number 3 Savile Row. Which was all very well, and we stopped the traffic, the police were hurling round. The main thing that amused us, of course, we were doing this in the middle of the very highly respectable tailoring industry. Very straight people who just couldn't get this together, this unbelievable noise, and the volume was quite incredible that we got up on the roof. And I think they're probably still getting complaints and arguments about whether they should have done it 3 years later. And, of course, the number that they recorded up there was Let It Be, which was the A, a hit record, and B, of course, was the title of the film that we were filming.
The Beatle film is just pure documentary of us slogging and working.
On Let It Be.
Yeah, on the album. And the hold-up of the album is because we want this film to go out simultaneously. Originally, we were rehearsing. We were rehearsing the songs that we were planning to do in some big TV spectacular or something. We had a vague idea of doing a TV show, but we really didn't know the formula of how to do it, because we didn't really want to do, obviously we didn't want to do a magical mystery tour, having already been on that trip, and we didn't want to do sort of the Tom Jones spectacular, and we're always trying to be to do something slightly different, and we were down in Apple rehearsing. And we decided to film it on 16mm to maybe use as a documentary. And the record happened to be the rehearsal of the record, and the film happened to be, rather than a TV show, it happened to be the film of us making the record. So it's very rough in a way. You know, it's nice because, again, you can see our warts, you can hear us talking, you can hear us playing out of tune, and you can hear us coughing and all those things. It's the complete opposite to the sort of clinical approach that we've normally had, you know.
George Harrison. To all intents, the Beatles were still fairly harmonious. But during the filming, there were a few squabbles over camera angles and musical policy, and the 8 o'clock start every morning wasn't exactly conducive to the creation of good music. At Apple, the Beatles were running into business problems. George Harrison again.
We just spend money when we wanted to spend money, but we didn't know where we were spending it from or if we paid taxes on it. You know, we were really in bad shape as far as that was concerned, because none of us really could be bothered. We just felt as though we were rich, because really we were rich by what we sold and what we did. But it wasn't really the case, you know, because it was so untogether, the business side of it.
Derek Taylor, who was there.
It was too much for the people who were there to run. You know, I'm not an administrator. I'm a terrible administrator. Certain things I'm good at, you know. I'm good at, you know, some instinctive things I can do, things that can be done off the top of my head but don't need any real consistent application. And they weren't skilled in administration, of course. Why should they be? So no one was really running the place. It was running itself, and even places can't run themselves. They have to be run. And somebody had to come in and do it. And it turned out that it was Alan Klein.
And it was Alan Klein who approached John first.
I wanted to find out first if he realized the position he was. He indicated it. He had made a public statement about the financial problems that Apple had. And it was based upon this statement that I realized that he was aware of what I had been aware of. And so I called him and asked him if I could help. It was general and as broad as that.
Having asked Klein to look at the problems at Apple, they appointed the New York law firm of Eastman & Eastman as general counsel to the company.
She's a killer dealer when she's down.
Alan Klein again.
I spoke to John Lennon from the beginning. The question of them being able to and free to do what they wanted so that they could realize their own individual potential is something that I think they're doing within Apple by themselves. You know, the function of Apple was certainly not to restrict them.
They felt free to do other things, too. In the month of March, two Beatle weddings. On the 12th, Paul McCartney, the last bachelor Beatle, married Linda Eastman, the daughter of Lee Eastman, who, with his son John, were Eastman and Eastman. Shortly after Paul's wedding, John and Yoko did their thing in Gibraltar. Get Back, the Beatles single released soon after those weddings on April the 15th. John and Yoko spent their honeymoon at the Amsterdam Hilton promoting a peace campaign from their bed. Why Amsterdam?
If we did it in Paris, all they talk about was, oh, Monsieur Corinne had a happening in 1930, you know? And they'd only see it in that light. And in London, they'd say, oh, it's the freaks again, you know? So we get more effect, have more effect on Britain if we're abroad. We're not doing a Johnson or Nixon come Queening of England come shake hands PR tour. You know. We're here to talk to the press because the press and the TV are the communicating channels.
Our meeting was really magic. And for instance, this event that we're doing too, you know, it came about, I think, between this magical relationship somehow, you know, and it is really magical.
The press seemed to think we were going to sort of make love in public, you know, because of we made an album with us naked. They seemed to think anything goes, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said, it might be a very good idea for peace, but I think I'd probably be the producer of that event rather than actually in the event, you know.
And that was the first of John and Yoko's lie-ins for peace. Though in April, in a different event, they sent out acorns to many heads of state in an effort to persuade them to grow oak trees. Soon after, they issued an LP of unfinished music number 2, Life with the Lions. George Harrison also made an experimental album of electronic sounds and called it just that. Ringo, meanwhile, sailed for America to film some location shots for the movie The Magic Christian.
I like it at the moment because it's not too hard, you know, and I just go in and do me bit and get out.
In May, John and Yoko flew to Canada for another peace campaign in Montreal. A single was issued, the lyric of which reflected the somewhat turbulent reception they'd been getting on their travels.
Standing in the dock at Southampton, get to Holland or France. The man in the Mac said, you've got to go back. You know they didn't even give us a chance. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Finally made the plane into Paris.
In July, John took his wife touring, but the trip ended sadly in Scotland when they were involved in a car crash which put them both in hospital for a few days. However, this didn't prevent the release of the first single by the Plastic Ono band, Give Peace a Chance.
Two, one, two, three, four.
The eventual lineup of the band was, give or take a few friends, John and Yoko, with Klaus Voormann, Eric Clapton, and Alan White. Though this single features everyone who could crowd into the Montreal Hotel bedroom where the disc was made. The reason why John started to record separately from the other three?
And the fact is that now that we have so much material, it'll, you know, we have, you know, we've got to have outlets somewhere else, and my outlet's going to be the Plastic Ono band, probably. Because we established the name. I mean, Paul makes the Mary Hopkin things, and maybe he'll sing some of his numbers himself instead of letting Mary do them, or George, instead of Billy Preston album, will make his own album. Because there's just too much material to get on a Beatles album. It's just that, you know.
In spite of John's solo efforts, the Beatles as a group did start work on another album and spent a lot of time in the studios through July and August. George also continued his interest in Eastern religions and philosophy by helping the Krishna Society with their music. He produced a record with them called Hare Krishna Mantra.
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
John Lennon, though, went back to Canada that September for a rock and roll revival.
Toronto welcomes the Plastic Ono Band. Toronto, Brower and Walker present the Plastic Ono Band. Give peace a chance. Give peace a chance.
Okay, we're just going to do numbers that we know, you know, because we've never played together before. Well, it's a 1 for the money, 2 for the show, 3 to get ready now. Go, get, go, go. Step on that loose weight. Well, you can do anything behind for them loose weight. You can knock me down, tread on my face.
Well, we were here about 11 o'clock one night, and we got a phone call through saying, come to Toronto.
And they were going to, they really were inviting us as king and queen to preside over it, not play, but I didn't hear that.
Really?
So I said, okay, just give me time to get a band together. So then it all happened like that. We went the next morning.
Richie York, a Toronto journalist friend of John's.
John was scared, really scared before. You know, he was really terrified. I mean, he hadn't played for so long. And, and of course, I guess he was worried about Beatles-type hysteria. So when he finally got there, you know, he was really uptight and edgy and nervous. And but, you know, when he got on the stage, he was fine. You know, he just went out there and walloped away. You make me dizzy in the when you rock and roll.
All this concert was recorded and issued later as the live Peace in Toronto 1969 album. Before that one, Abbey Road. Come Together, the first track of side one from Abbey Road, issued on September the 26th. Also on that side, Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Maxwell's Silver Hammer is just something of Paul's, which we've been trying to record it. We spend a hell of a lot of time on it. And it's one of those that instant sort of whistle along tunes, which I don't know, some people will hate and some people will really love it. You know, it's more like sort of honey pie, you know, fun sort of song. But that was good because, you know, I had that synthesizer and that's one of the tunes we use synthesizer on, which is pretty effective on this.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, 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 oh. Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine, calls her on the phone. Can I take you out to the pictures, Joan?
Side two, Here Comes the Sun, is the other song that I wrote on the album. And it was written on a nice sunny day this early summer in Eric Clapton's garden. Because we'd been through really hell with business and, you know, it's very heavy. And on that day, I just felt as though I was sagging off, like from school. It was like that. I just didn't come in one day. And just the release of being in the sun, and it was just really nice day. And that song just came. It's a bit like If I Needed Someone, and, you know, like that basic sort of, the riff going through it is the same as, you know, all those Bells of Rimney sort of bird type thing.
Yeah. Here comes the sun. He
comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Final word on the album, not from George, who's done all the talking so far, but John.
I don't remember it, you know, because Abbey Road, for me, as always with all the albums, I like some of the tracks and I don't like others of the tracks. And it's always been the same. I've never been a knocked-out Beatle fan by any of our albums. You know, I like some of the work we do and some of it I don't. And Abbey Road was a competent album.
Boy, you're gonna carry that weight. Carry that weight a long time. Boy, you're gonna carry that weight. Carry that weight a long time.
The album Abbey Road. The next single out by John Lennon was another Plastic Ono creation, Cold Turkey.
I offered Cold Turkey to Beatles, but they weren't ready to record a single. So I did it as Plastic Ono. You know? I don't care what it goes out as long as it goes out.
Fever is high, can't see no future.
That came out on October the 24th, 1969, and a week later, a Beatles single was issued as well. It also happened that it was one of Alan Klein's favourite songs.
I suggested rather strongly that that single be released from the album, and I think you'll find it's the first time a single was ever released from a Beatles album. And it was done because, maybe not to the knowledge of the outside world, but it was pretty much decided by everyone that the four of them would try to do something individually within the structure. In other words, within, you know, their arrangement, they would have a chance to maybe magnify their own individual talent or let it be seen. And I felt it was important for George at this juncture to show himself. I thought it was the best song on the album, you know. And John did also, and that's why it went out. That went out and Come Together was on the other side.
That went to position number 4 in the charts, but Cold Turkey didn't do so well, only getting to number 14. For the consequences of this relative failure, as well as more about John and Yoko's efforts to promote peace, and news of Paul, George, Ringo, and John's individual albums, listen to the next episode of The Beatles Story. The Beatles Story was written and produced for the BBC by Johnny Veering.